Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Little known fact about my guest today. In his early career, he took up the family business, nursing, but his life's purpose was to be an artist. Welcome, actor Adrian Holmes, to the podcast. Welcome, Adrian.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everyone. My guest today is Adrian Holmes. Adrian is an actor and a producer, and most recently an NAACP Award nominee. He has done over 100 film and television shows. Currently, you can see him as Uncle Phil in the second season of Peacock's Bel Air, a dramatic reimagination of the beloved series, The French Prince of Bel Air. Other notable TV and film credits include Star Trek Strange New Worlds, V-Wars 19-2, Sacred Lies, The Boys, Arrow on film, Skyscraper alongside The Rock, Chained, Vendetta, Frankie and Alice, Wrecked, and Red Riding Hood. He produced the docudrama Barrow Freedom Fighter. There's so many more things that people can Google or go to IMDb. But I don't want to spend time reading the 100 credits. I want to welcome Adrian to the podcast. Hello, my friend.
Hello. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited. I was someone who very much was around when the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was on the first time. I'm sure you have met younger people who kind of have heard of it, but it's not part of the fabric of their lives the way it was for some of us.
Yeah, Well, some of the cast on our show, they weren't born when the original show was on, you know, so they came about, you know, to see it in the reruns, so... It's kind of a trip when you hear that. You're like, what? But yeah.
I didn't think I was old. What? I know.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It's hard to wrap your brain around it, but it's true.
You know, in sort of doing a little research about the Peacock series that you're on, I was so blown away. I watched the trailer that Morgan Cooper made which all of this kind of sprung out of his imagination. Tell me about that, what you know about that and sort of the journey of the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had a vision. He said he was driving, he was in Kansas City, and he was just going through this tunnel. It was a very famous tunnel in Kansas City. And when he came out the other side, he said it just hit him. It just came to him in a vision. And it came so strong and so strongly that he knew that he had to act on this. He had to do something right away. And, you know, when God gives you an assignment, you know, when he speaks to you, he speaks to you. And that was definitely from God. And he got to work and he put together the trailer and such an incredible job, you know, money from his own pocket. And, you know, he got all his people together and created the magic, you know, and, you know, I remember when I saw it, this is very smart. What a great idea.
Yeah.
Because the original show, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, it planted a lot of seeds for very important conversations. You know, if you ever watch the episodes, you'll see a lot of them, you know, dealt with a lot of important subject matter and topics and stuff, but they explored it through laughter. And through the comedy, right? But underneath it, the root of it, there was a message. There was something to be learned and to be taken from. And I think that's why it was such a huge hit. It was you know, as we say, lightning in a bottle at that time, what they created. So what we're trying to do is recreate that for this generation, for today. And because it's a dramatic reimagining, we don't explore it through the comedy. We explore it for what it is. We hit it head on, and we're able to peel back more of the layers and really get to the heart of these issues and of the characters themselves, and really get to understand what makes them tick. You know, who are they? You know, where are they from? What are they about? You know, and they're so relatable to, you know, people, you know, in the world today, and what they're going through. That there's people out there like Philip Banks and like Viv and Jeffrey and the kids as well, you know. So I pride myself on the show and just how smart it has been in being a blueprint for so many, you know. It's not just a product for entertainment purposes, but it's like a teaching tool too. It's like therapy. I find it like it's like therapy for the community, for the culture, medicine, you know. It's edutaining, edutainment, as you know, some people would say, you know. That's a phrase that I like to use. So yeah.
I mean, other than them having the same names as the characters from the sitcom, and obviously the blueprint was set in terms of a kid from Philly gets in trouble and an uncle, you know, in Bel Air, and that family kind of adopt him at his mom's request, right? That's sort of the same premise. And now, you know, it feels like the Spike Lee version rather than, you know, the half hour sitcom version. Well, you're also brilliant in it. And you know what listeners on my podcast won't really be able to tell from your accent is you, my friend, did not grow up in Los Angeles yourself.
No, I did not.
However, you sound like you really could have. So talk a little bit about, you know, in reading about you, you have the most fascinating personal history. So I would love to share how a small town boy from North Wales ended up via Barbados. Like, you have quite like a lot of geography in your life that happened before you got to LA. So tell us about like growing up, your childhood, and how we come to meet you today here.
Absolutely. Well, I like to say I'm a citizen of the world because I'm not just from one place. My family, the roots are from Barbados in the Caribbean. My mother moved to the UK, to England, to do her nursing. And so she had me there in Wrexham, North Wales, where I was born. I lived in Liverpool and Chester, where I have family still today. Then her twin brother moved to Vancouver, Canada, and got a job. He's also a nurse. So he basically, you know, pulled her over and said, "Come on over, the water's fine." And so she went for a swim in Vancouver, beautiful Vancouver, BC. And that's where I grew up. So I was an only child. My mom was a single mom.
Okay.
For me growing up till I was about 9 years old, when she met my stepfather, who had two older kids, and then they had two kids together. So I have two half brothers who are both younger, of course, and they're my heart. We're very close.
Wow.
Very close. And actually today is my youngest brother's son, my nephew Micah's first birthday.
He just happy birthday, Micah! It's February 22nd.
Yes,
he was born. Whenever this is out.
Yeah, he was born 2/22/22. So how special is that? Huh? What a date.
Wow. Yeah. I am not a numerologist, but I know that that's good. I know it's special. In my bones that that is good.
Oh, yeah. So I grew up, I moved when I was 4.5 to Vancouver and grew up in Vancouver and its surrounding areas and cities, and lived in Nanaimo on Vancouver Island, where my mother currently lives. And I had an amazing childhood. And even though my mom was a single mom, I never missed out on anything. I never felt lack in any way, shape, or form. She's my best friend, and we're very, very close. I'm very blessed to, and I'm so grateful that she's here. She's still with me to share in my success, you know, because unfortunately not everybody, you know, gets that. And it's not something I take for granted. You know, I thank God every day that she's she's still here with me to share in this incredible journey that I've gotten to be a part of.
So how did, from a nursing family, how did you end up becoming a lover of the arts and then a performer yourself?
Yeah, well, you know, when you're in the middle of five kids, you know, you kind of fighting for attention a little bit, you know. And I was a shy kid. A lot of people might not know that, but I wasn't looking for the spotlight, you know. But once I was in the spotlight, it's kind of like karaoke, you know, like you're hesitant to go up and sing. But once they put the mic in your hand, it's hard for you to give it back.
It's hard for
you. You know what I mean?
Yes, it's like, yes. It's
like, You're finally found your footing and you feel comfortable and you're like, wait a minute, I can sing this song. And you like me. So
yeah.
I guess for me, it was like when I stepped out on stage for the first time to do theater, I had that kind of an experience.
How old were you?
I was 11.
Okay.
I mean, I did like plays when I was, you know, younger than that, like eight, nine, but you know, Christmas plays and Santa's elves and nothing substantial, but you know, I was the tree or the rock or whatever, you know, it was whatever, nothing great. But in when I was 11, we did the Wizard of Oz at my elementary school, and I won the role of the lion. And two of my best friends, I played the Scarecrow and the Tin Man. And I remember our director, you know, asking us, okay, we got to sing, you know, we've got our solos. And my friends were too shy to sing. And I was shy because I love Michael Jackson and I love music. I love singing. And you know, Michael Jackson's my hero. I mean, you ask anybody, my whole room was wallpapered in Michael Jackson.
Right.
So I said to them, I said, yeah, I'll sing, you know, even though I was literally like so scared and thinking, what am I doing?
Yeah.
But, you know, I had a strong sense of, you know, you're going to be okay. You got this. And I always say, if the Lord takes you to it, he'll get you through it. And so, you know, I felt his presence very strongly. And so I did it and I sang my solo and we were on at the Surrey Arts Center for like a week or so. And I remember after one of the shows, this little girl came up to me and she asked me for my autograph. And I kid you not, I was 11 years old, walking to the car after the show with my mom. And she said, oh, mom, she's like to her mom, mom, there's the lion, you know, can I get his autograph? And she came over and I signed my little chicken scratch or whatever it was at that time. And I gave it to her and I made her day. She was so happy and just seeing the joy that I brought to her in that moment. It just made me go, oh, that's kind of cool. And mm-hmm. and I said to my mom initially, I was like, why does she want my autograph? I'm not Eddie Murphy. I'm not a star. She's like, but you were the lion and you were very good. And you know, you made her day. You did a great job, and that's all you need to. You don't have to be
right.
A superstar.
You brought her joy.
I brought her joy, exactly. Yeah. And so that was a moment for me. I think that kind of flicked the switch, you know, and it made me go, this is interesting. And so I just continued to, you know, do more plays throughout high school and then in college I did theater. And I just fell in love with it. It fell in love with me. I fell in love with it. We had a great relationship. And my mom, she wanted me to go to school to do nursing because she said, you know, you need to fall back just in case. You know, she was supportive. But, you know, like all parents,
right.
they really
realistic.
Want you to have that. Realistic, yeah. Exactly. And I remember seeing Eddie Murphy on an episode of the Arsenio Hall show way back in the day. And he said, I don't believe in plan B because it just takes away from plan A. I don't plan on falling back. I'm going to fall forward.
Yeah.
So that was my whole mentality. But then I thought, you know what? Why not? What's it going to hurt? You know, let me just do it. These years, you know, acting is a profession that I could do at any time. If
right.
I take 3-4 years to go to school and get a degree or diploma, whatever, it's not going to hurt. So I did that to appease mom.
So you went to nursing school?
I went to nursing school. Yeah, I did. I went and I worked at Vancouver General Hospital in spine. And I worked at St. Paul's in orthopedics. And I also worked at the GF Strong Rehab Center. So I worked a lot with mental injuries, spinal injuries. It was a game changer. It really opened my eyes and made me have a larger attitude of gratitude for everything, you know, just waking up in the morning and being able to take care of yourself, to be independent. A lot of us do that because we're on autopilot. We do that every day. We've been doing it since we were born, but we don't understand how precious it is and that it's actually a privilege to be able to brush your own teeth and dress yourself and make your own breakfast and drive your car and not be having to rely on someone else to do that. So it just made me go, oh my God. And then, you know, there's a quote where focus goes, energy flows. And I decided, you know, well, what is my calling? And my calling, I felt deep down, was to tell stories and to be an actor. And I felt it was something that I was pretty good at. I felt that I was okay at it. So I was like, let me go after it. And if I go after it and it doesn't work, at least I can say I tried, as opposed to not doing it at all. Because a lot of people that don't go after their goals and that they have regret later on in life. They're like, oh, I wonder what would have happened if I did that, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, you know. So I did it, and it started to take off. And I had.
So when you say I did it, like, what did that look like? Like, you're by day, you're like doing physical therapy with someone or whatever the need is. And then what? Like, take a class?
I was working on call at the hospital, you know, and so they would call me in to do shifts, and then I'd have auditions that would pop up from my agent. And so then I go to, you know, these auditions and.
So you had an agent?
Yes, I did. I had an agent from, I was about eighth grade. I was about 13. I think I got my first agent. And then, I started taking on-camera workshops and did some commercials and did a lot of background work. I started out doing extra work.
When you were like a kid, or college age?
When I was a kid, when I was like 13, 14.
Wow.
I was on sets in Vancouver. Vancouver was a very large hub for film and television. And so I was very lucky. I was very fortunate that it was right in my backyard, you know, and shows like 21 Jump Street and Wise Guy. And there was just so many shows back then that I got to.
So you're watching it and
I'm watching from
a particular chair, like when you're an extra, it's a really interesting, I bet you are so kind to background and generous.
Right? Well, I always say, I was like, imagine a show watching a movie with no background. What kind of world is that? You need the background.
Right.
You need people to fill the space, to create that world, to make it real.
Don't you feel like, because you've done it, don't you watch things and don't you find yourself literally sometimes not looking at the
main actors?
The principal cast.
And you're looking at the background. Yeah, I do that.
And it's my favorite thing.
And the background, when they're talking to each other, they're supposed to be talking or they're supposed to be doing that. And you can tell they're just like, oh, well. Or you'll see the same background person go by in
four
one
times.
Scene and four times in the same scene. You're like, wait a minute. He just came by. He was going that way. He went up the stairs. He's coming out this door. But hey, you know what? If we're doing that a lot, then the main story in the cast,
the main event is problematic.
The main event is problematic. That's right. Aside. So.
But what you're describing is an AD who's not exactly on top of their shit. But still, not the extra's fault.
It's not the extra's fault at all. They just show
they're
up
doing
and do what
they're
told.
They're
doing what they're told.
Did you like being an extra, or did you? A lot of extras, I feel like it's a total community, right? They're sort of on the same. They kind of do a lot of the same projects together. Were you sitting there going, "Man, coach, let me in there," or were you okay
100%.
Just what? Yeah,
100%. I was like, "Coach, put me in. I got this." Because the thing for me too is I was watching these actors, mess up their lines and doing stuff that fumble the ball, so to speak. And you don't see that. When you're watching a show, they cut all that fat out and they show you the perfect scene, the perfect take, right? But you don't realize how many takes it took to get to that perfect take, right? And they don't just come out the gate like that, And so it was great for me to see that because it made me understand that, oh, they're human beings. They're just like me. They're not these like entities that I can't attain, I can't reach.
That's a great lesson for a young person.
Yeah, it is. So I learned a lot. It was a great lesson that I learned in watching and you know, I got to expand as an actor and just as a, you know, just to understand just being on set, seeing the cameras, seeing the marks on the floor where people have to walk to, all the technicalities.
Right.
Know, these help you as an actor. So being doing background for a while and then going from background to a guest star. I got my first guest star on a show when I was 16, around 16. It was a show called Neon Rider. And it was about a guy who had a rant for troubled kids, troubled teens. And I played a crackhead named Twist. It was called Twist in the Wind. And the lead actor on the show, his name was Winston Record. And he passed away, rest in peace. But he was kind of like a Michael Landon. He kind of had that Little House on the Prairie mm-hmm. kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And I remember he told me when I first started working, he said, if you treat every job like your first and your last, you'll never stop working. Always be humble. He was such an amazing human, just a great energy, very talented. But he gave me some words of wisdom. And I hold that with me. I've held that with me all this time. And I treat every job like it's my first and my last, just mentally, because that way you stay in it and you have an attitude of gratitude and you don't get complacent and you don't get jaded right. and you don't get off. Cause a lot of times people have been in the business for a long time and they find things to complain about when there really isn't anything to complain about, if that makes sense, you know?
Totally.
And
totally.
And yeah. Yeah.
So we got to the background and your childhood background work, extra work, because you're like, I'm going to give this a shot. And you leave nursing and you told me you had an agent. And now I get like how that happened. So yeah. What was like the lucky break as now an adult leaving nursing that changed yeah. things?
Wow. Well, you know, I was fortunate in Vancouver to, you know, basically I was like Tarzan swinging from vine to vine, you know, and you know, I did all types of shows, you know, sci-fi, drama, action, you know, so the game changer for me, it was the fact that I was in demand mm-hmm. and I was getting work on a regular basis and I was, you know, I was making a living doing what I love. And so that's when I had to go, oh, well, I'm not actually available for these shifts anymore. Did I enjoy it? Absolutely. Did I learn a lot from it? 100%. But is it my calling? Is it what I feel was my purpose?
Right.
No, I think that it was my purpose for a time. I had to go through that. It wasn't a coincidence. Everything happens for a reason. And that was part of my journey. I wouldn't have changed anything. But I had, it was just for a time.
Right.
And I filled that, you know, that quota. And then I was able to now with a clear mind, an open heart, I can go and really go after what I wanted to do. And once I had that energy and once I had that intention, I set the intention and went after it. That's when, you know, I was like, I couldn't be stopped in my mind. I was like, no, the train's left the station now. We're going. It was like a bullet train. And then here we are today, you know, playing this iconic role. I was in Vancouver working on a Christmas movie at the time. And I had gotten the call for this show. And of course, like anybody, you know, you're kind of, you're like, what? Are you serious? Like, because you identify so much with the original cast.
Sure.
And James Avery, you know, rest in peace, you know, he was a force, you know, physically as well, you know, he's a very imposing character.
Having a Zoom audition at the time? Did you get to meet people?
Yeah.
How did it go?
Yeah, it was all Zoom.
Yeah.
We did the whole thing via Zoom. I was on a call with Morgan, TJ and Rashid, our original showrunners, it was like, I just said, you know what, I'm just gonna have fun. I'm just gonna have fun. I read the script and I really connected with the material. I loved it. I loved the writing. I loved the concept. I saw the trailer that Morgan did and I thought, this is brilliant, you know.
He's gifted. What a gifted person. Yeah.
He really is. And he's I'm so happy to say, you know, call him a brother. He's like a brother to me now too. So I just said, let me just have fun and hopefully, you know, and I thought about today, who's our modern day Philip Banks, so to speak. And I the first person that came to mind was Barack Obama.
You know, perfect.
He's a politician. He's a family man. He's a husband. He's a father.
A gentleman.
And he's a gentleman. He's got class. He carries himself with dignity, poise, and he's a great speaker. And so, you know, I could listen to him, you know, read anything, you know, he's just such a
great person. So you tapped into that sort of vibe.
I tapped into that because I was, you know, I didn't want to get lost in what James Avery did in the original. And Morgan made that very clear to all of us. He said, I don't want you all to feel that you have to recreate what the original sitcom, you know, the actors did in the original show. That's exactly the opposite of what I want you to do. This is a new reimagining, a dramatic reimagining of that show for this time, meaning we have to have a new footprint. And you're creating your own shoes here. We don't want you to have to fill their shoes. Don't think about that, because that puts a lot of pressure on someone as well. And you can't fill his shoes. What he did was special to him, you know, in that time. And I would be crazy to think I could do what he did. I have to do what I can do and just trust God to give me the energy, the essence, all the tools that I need to make this character and to tell the story in the best way that I can, and just to be as authentic and true to the moment and to the character as I can be, and just whatever happens, happens, and just have faith that it's all going to work out. And by God's grace, it all came together. So.
Well, before I let you go, is there a little known fact that you haven't shared already that you can share now about you?
You know what? A lot of people don't know, but I'm a pretty badass ping pong player. Table tennis, to the real players, table tennis. I grew up with a table tennis table in my house, and that's one of the games I played a lot, as well as pool. I love pool. Yeah.
All right. You're a gamesman.
I'm a gamesman. Yeah, I'm a gamesman. And I'm sure there's a few other things too, but that's what just came to mind.
Listen, that for today, I'll take it for today.
You'll take that? Oh,
I will take it for today. What a pleasure to get to talk to you. What an honor to get to watch your work and the integrity that you bring to everything you do. And thank you for being on the podcast, and congrats on everything. What an amazing career with so much more to come.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, and I appreciate this. This was so nice talking to you. And have a great rest of your day.
You too. Bye. Little known fact, now you can watch hours and hours of my interviews with your favorite artists as they talk about the art they love to make on YouTube. That's right, I have a YouTube channel. It's called Little Known Facts with Alana Levine. Catchy, right? Subscribe and enjoy. Little known fact, if you want to donate to the podcast, just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Thank you so much in advance for your generosity. Have a great day. Clouds can make the wind blow, bugs can make the grass grow, so there you go. These are little known facts that you know. This episode of Little Known Facts was edited by Nicholas Klar. We record in New York City. The Little Known Facts theme song was written and recorded and sung by Georgia Famusa, with backup vocals by Caleb Famusa. Thank you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.